Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon, and today we continue our inspiration article. It's July 11th, and back in the studio, I have two panelists here to help me discuss this topic. First, let's welcome back Zach.
Thank you so much. Good to be back and journeying on with Jacob in his inspiring story.
Zach, what has inspired you most so far with Jacob's story?
Well, you know, they were never really settled growing up. And I think to see him have to move from one refugee camp to another, to a bad situation, to the next, now he kind of finds himself persevering in school that's allowed him to move to the United States and just to kind of create this new life. It's all really inspiring.
It is. And welcome back, Joe.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Joe, how about you? What has inspired you about Jacob's story?
Something that's really inspired me is just the idea that, you know, as a boy, he had nothing, to the point where in going in difficult areas, there was no house, there were no buildings, running water. And so you're hearing of him working with these boys to build houses, to survive. And just to see that and know where he is now, and to think about that difference between before and after, and knowing that, you know, you can face difficult circumstances, you can face these problems and actually come out the other side. There is hope.
Right, and many times we want to give up. I know I do. And to hear a story like this, someone who has probably been through much more than most or all of us have been through, and talking about, of course, everyone listening. And so to know that he can get through that and persevere is inspiring truly for us. Now today we are moving on to in the journey, and Jacob, he is moving to the United States, and this brought a lot of culture shock. Now I mentioned this a bit at the end of yesterday's program, this idea of culture shock. All of us in the studio here can relate to that, can't we, Zach?
Certainly true. I know I did. In 2010, when I first arrived here in Taiwan, I had a lot of culture shock. But I think one interesting thing is actually, you know, that was about 8 years ago. And so it takes time, and I think culture shocks often comes in waves. Mm-hmm. And you find new ways to kind of just accommodate and assimilate into a new area.
Yeah, what were some of the issues that you faced?
Well, certainly there are the more obvious ones. Different food, different ways of transportation, obviously communication is big.
Yeah. Joe, did you experience culture shock?
So I remember coming to Asia specifically to learn Chinese, and so I was very into all the different things. Unfortunately, though, I experienced what some people call reverse culture shock.
Really? What is that, first of all?
So reverse culture shock is where you've left your culture and you've been away for a certain length of time. And when you go back to your culture, you actually have this sort of strange feeling of culture shock.
Okay, so you left the United States, you came here to Asia, and then you went back to the United States, and when you went back to the United States, it was kind of a shock to you culturally.
Right. Just to, especially in my hometown, you know, there were so many different things. Roads were different. Buildings that were there weren't there anymore.
Yeah.
And also just maybe even talking to my nieces and nephews who use slang that I've never heard before.
Yeah.
And my English had sort of, you know, not kept up with the times maybe. And just general sort of cultural norms where someone would offer me something and I'd say, oh, no, I can't take it. I'm sorry. No. And then they wouldn't offer it to me again to say yes.
That's right. Yes. And here in Asia, many times we wait for the third time to be offered, right? In the United States, people are more straightforward. If you say no, okay, moving on. So you have to get used to those things again. And I definitely experienced some culture shock when I came here. I mean, I think part of it is just everything is just different, not just the culture, but you're starting on a new path and you're just learning all these new things. And so it's a lot to take in. At one point, you're learning the language, and so there are a lot of different things to get used to. So we're going to look at Jacob and his move to the United States and the culture shock that he endured at this point in his life. We are on page 20, so if you have your magazine, you can follow along, or also if you have your digital device, you can follow along there as well as we have our first reading for today.
culture shock. The United States did not match the image of the country that Ayun and his friends had created in their minds. But he had a plan when he came to the United States, and it did not involve quitting. He would become a citizen, go to college, and have a career.
All right, so the image that Jacob had in his mind was different than reality. When he moved to the United States, things were kind of different than he expected.
Yeah, he kind of went through this reality check, so to speak, and that is, you know, adjusting your expectations for a place with kind of the real circumstances that you find yourself in. And I think that's a common problem for a lot of us.
Sure.
It's really interesting. So if you do a little bit of digging, you can actually, you'll learn that there are actually classes that they take, these little small classes to explain American culture a little bit. And so you'll see them kind of in a small classroom, and there'll be someone from the United States that goes into that refugee camp to try to teach them basic things like, who is the president of the United States? Mm-hmm. And one of the exercises that they do is they actually bring ice with them. And they're like, this is what winter feels like. And getting like snow into their hands and trying to make them understand, because some of them are going to be in like Michigan.
Right.
Or places that has winter.
Yeah, very different circumstances.
I did not realize that they did that. I find that so interesting. And I think that's really practical, or, you know, quite pragmatic for people who do find themselves in these, for the very first time experiencing a winter in Montana, or a, you know, just something so, so different than, you know, say the climate that is in, they experience in Africa.
Yeah. That's just another thing that you don't think that people would have to deal with, you know, and the climate, the culture, there's a lot of things that people have to get used to. But Jacob, he had a plan when he came to the U.S., and it did not involve quitting, and that's not surprising that this was part of his plan, right?
And here we see more of that perseverance that, you know, we've been talking about these past few days, a story that's inspiring, and, you know, it's more of the same.
Yeah, so he became a citizen. Then he went to college, and he has a career, as we already know about. He's living in California, and he is a psychiatric assistant. And so he has accomplished a lot. He's living in a different country, and he is a success.
Right. You know, by the measure of success that he had here was, I set up these three goals, and he has accomplished all three. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure that there were low points, frustrations, probably things he didn't expect, but he continued to persist.
Yeah. And it says a lot about the, I guess, the education that he received. You know, he was in a different country. He was in a refugee camp. He still went to school, but he came to the U.S. and was able to go to college and succeed.
Right. You can see here that his studiousness is paying off. It's allowing him to launch into new goals and new ventures, and allow him to really set up a life in a new country after having such a traumatic experience, and go on to help other people.
Yeah.
And we'll read more about that a little bit later on, I think, in our article.
All right, well, we've learned a bit about his move to the U.S. Next, we're going to talk more about his family. Let's learn about that in our next reading.
Family life. Before leaving Kakuma refugee camp, he had proposed to Alakir Dung, another refugee. Dung, 35, had experienced her own harrowing escape. She was only 3 years old, but had to walk the 1,000 miles to the refugee camp in Ethiopia. And on the journey, 4 years later, from the Ethiopian camp to Kenya, Dung says her stepmother was shot in her left foot before the family reached the Kenyan border.
Well, we've learned a lot about Jacob, and now we're learning more about his family. And we learn here that before he left that refugee camp, that Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, he had actually proposed to a girl. And this was another refugee in the camp. Her name is Alakir Dung. And she's 35 years old now. And her story is incredibly amazing as well, right? We learn about that in this paragraph, this next paragraph. What are the details of that, Joe?
Right, so we find that Miss Deng had also experienced her own harrowing escape, that same very dangerous journey that Ayun had also experienced. And so something that's harrowing is something extremely upsetting because it's connected with suffering. We often talk about a harrowing journey, a harrowing story, things of that nature.
Now, Jacob was 8 years old when the civil war broke out in Sudan, or South Sudan. And then Miss Deng, she was only 3 years old when she had to walk those 1,000 miles to the refugee camp in Ethiopia. So I cannot imagine that at all, being 3 years old and having to go through that.
Right, so you really start to see how this really was a harrowing journey. She makes that 1,000-mile trek or journey to safety. And here, 3 years old. Again, perspective, right? We said earlier that, you know, you're trying to experience this from Jacob's perspective at 8 years old, and here you have a 3-year old mm-hmm. who is traveling. It says that she's traveling with some family, her stepmother. And, you know, before we talk about her, you know, it says that she had to make this trek not once, but twice.
Mm-hmm. So she was 3 years old, and she was walking to the refugee camp in Ethiopia. And then 4 years later, she went from the Ethiopian camp to Kenya. And her stepmother, we learned earlier that they were caught in the crossfire. Well, we see here that her stepmother definitely was caught in that crossfire. And her left foot, she was shot in her left foot before they actually reached the Kenyan border.
Right. And so it's just something to imagine here. You know, Jacob was 8. And so he probably has at least some childhood memories of what life was like before the war.
Mm-hmm.
This young lady does not. Essentially, her entire life has been being a refugee and being in war-torn areas.
Yeah. So, again, unimaginable.
And I suppose if you're looking at from the stepmother's perspective, obviously you're already kind of fighting this uphill battle. All the odds are against you. You have lack of resources. And you'd think, you know, okay, shoes are one thing, but here it's just feet, right? Mm-hmm. Your feet are your resource to take you from one place to another. And now she's been shot. Wow, right?
Yeah.
To kind of imagine what that would have been like for that family.
Yeah, again, the stories are just intense. I don't know how else to say it, but it's really hard to believe that you'd have to go through this, especially at such a young age.
I recall once, I'm not trying to compare anything, but just as a point of reference, I had stubbed my toe, my pinky toe, and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, shoot, you know, this is going to, I'll suffer a little bit, but it won't be too bad. It actually threw off my balance, and I found it really, really hard to walk all week. And you'd think something as small as this would be manageable. It was actually really hard. So, you know, that was just one toe. This is not a gun shot wound. And so it really does put things in perspective.
Yeah, I know. I hate it when I stub my toe. It's like the worst thing, you know, that you can imagine. And of course, we're not comparing. We can't do that. But that just gives an example of the smallest thing that can cause a lot of pain. And so something like this, you know, you're just trying to survive, really. I mean, every day that you survive, I'm sure you're thankful in this situation. So we are talking about family life. We just learned, that Jacob proposed to Alakir, who's another refugee, and we learned a little bit about her story. But next, we have some happy news. We've been waiting for more of that in this story. So let's learn about that in our next reading.
Wedding bells. Deng met Ayun at the elementary school at the Kakuma refugee camp. They wed in Kenya in 2004. After the wedding, Ayun returned to the United States to continue his education and to save money to bring Deng, who was pregnant with twin boys, to the United States. Deng and the children joined Ayun in 2008 in Omaha, Nebraska. She is now studying to be a licensed vocational nurse, taking classes in Fresno, California. She and a Yuan and their family live in a two-story home in a gated community in Hanford. But they miss South Sudan, weddings, dances, and cultural interactions.
All right, wedding bells. So this is a happy part of the story. We learn that Deng met a Yuan at the elementary school at the Kakuma refugee camp. They got married in Kenya in 2004.
And this is just a very kind of happy turn in the story. You know, at this point, it's 2004, so we know that a Yuan has been in the United States for a few years, right? Mm. He was a refugee and left in 2001. But just to see that in all of this chaos, in all of the things that happen, people can still find each other.
That's right. And so, you know, he was in the U.S., he went back to Kenya, he got married. After the wedding, he came back to the U.S. to continue his education, and he was saving some money, and he wanted to bring his wife back with him, of course. And then she also, they got pregnant, they had twin boys, and then, you know, he's trying to, I can't imagine saving enough money for all that, by the way. But anyway, he has a lot of work to do because he has two kids on the way and a wife. He's trying to bring all of them to the U.S.
Right. Well, and being married myself, I'm just kind of imagining being separated or that far away by distance over time. Oh, it's not easy. Again, you know, you're kind of fighting these circumstances, but again, you see his perseverance and his willingness to kind of sacrifice for his family. I think it's really remarkable and a good lesson.
This is something I think is really difficult for many Westerners to understand, this idea that you travel a really great distance and work hard for several years.
Mm.
I remember reading stories about Chinese immigrants that would go over into the United States, and they would just work for a decade and keep sending money back home to the wife, to the children, to the parents. And that perspective is just so different from anything I could understand.
Right. Yeah, it is. And it shows the willingness to put in the hard work and also the distance, the difficulty that goes along with that. There's a lot involved. And so he was, Jacob was working hard in the U.S., saving money. But eventually, in 2008, his family joined him in the state of Nebraska, in Omaha, actually. And we have a picture there of the family with all the kids. They now have six kids. And so they are all living in California now. And so you see that picture there at the top of page 20. Well, we learn that Deng is now studying to be a licensed vocational nurse. What is that?
Well, here we get a little more insight in that not only did Jacob kind of have this remarkable tale, but both he and his wife, you know, she's had quite the journey of her own. And the fact that, you know, she escaped from the war-ridden country and made her way to the refugee camp, pursued her own education, found a husband, is able to be a mother, and now is studying to be a licensed vocational nurse. So here she's a nurse and someone that can just provide that basic, kind of the basic caring that a nurse would provide. And, you know, she's licensed. That would allow her to kind of make a living off of this. She's a professional. She can get paid for these services. And right, and it says here that you can practice in the states of California and Texas. And so that would probably allow them to kind of set their goals and their sights on those states.
Something that's interesting for listeners, the licensed vocational nurse, you might be wondering, why in the world would it only give you Texas and California? And that's because the other 48 states of the country, they have another vocation. It's called a registered nurse.
Yeah, RN.
An RN. Mm-hmm. And so they're basically similar positions, but because of sort of state laws and medical systems, they have different titles and different processes for getting that qualification.
All right. Thanks for that explanation. And she and Jacob, they live in a two-story home in a gated community in Hanford, and that is in California. Gated community, of course, there is kind of a wall around it, and there's a gate that you have to go through, and it's put up, of course, for security.
Right. And I think, you know, I kind of appreciate this part of the description of the story just in that, wow, what a contrast, you know, from where they had been to where they are now.
Yes.
Going from completely being vulnerable out in the wild in the forest to having build their own homes with thatched roofs, this and that, and now kind of being inside of a community, you get the sense that there is people around them, neighbors to support, and it's gated.
And I'm sure, like, someone who's gone through all that and then made it to this kind of situation where there is more security, much more security, I would think that would cause you to be extremely grateful. You know, we take things for granted all the time, but when you go through something like this, I think it would cause you to be really grateful for, you know, where you are.
Right. And to know that, you know, without here, because they're refugees, so without the United States assistance, you know, how different would their lives have been? Mm-hmm. But the fact that they were able to take that bit of assistance, that opportunity, and just run with it and really make a life for themselves.
Right.
It is also very inspirational.
It is. So they do miss their home country, of course. They miss South Sudan, and that's not surprising.
Right. Obviously, it's, you know, they're thankful and they are, I'm sure, appreciative of finding themselves and having, you know, benefiting from all of their hard work and being in this new situation. But obviously, they're going to miss kind of their background and where they came from and the culture and the ties that you've built.
Family members.
Real people.
And then, you know, you have different culture interactions and festivals and holidays that you miss out on some stuff.
Right, especially because you didn't voluntarily leave. You know, basically, there as refugees, you're not deciding to leave these places because you want to. Mm-hmm. You're being pushed out because
That's
of different
true.
Situations. And I think that can make the longing almost worse because you don't have a choice.
Right, that's true. Well, as we talked about on day one, Jacob is helping others there in California by telling his story, but he's also helping those back in South Sudan. Let's learn about that in our last reading for today.
Reaching out. And Dung and Ayuan worry about family and friends who remain in South Sudan. We're helping our families back home, Dung says. They don't have anything there. Our country is still in war, and people are still suffering. Someday, maybe as a nurse, she can go back to South Sudan to help the people, she says. Ayuan also wants to keep helping children in South Sudan. He has brought a dozen children to a school in Kenya. Education made his life better, he says, and he wants others to have the same opportunity. I'm happy to give back, because I was a refugee like them.
All right, well, we see here that Jacob is reaching out, and when you reach out, you're not just reaching your hand out literally, are you, Joe?
No, you're trying to offer help. You're trying to offer support to someone else.
That's right, and we all need to do that at times. We need to reach out and help people who are in need, and many times, Zach, we don't want to take the time to do that.
It's true. Well, and also I would just add that, you know, with reaching out, it can happen in a variety of ways. You know, Joe pointed out it's offering help. Well, people are going to find themselves in different situations and have different needs, and so this reaching out, it could be a literal physical hand, you know, offering someone help,
sure.
But it could mean so much more. And in this case, you know, he's connecting with other refugees and, you know, people that need to process these kinds of experiences. And so he's reaching out by offering this kind of psychological support.
All right. Well, Jacob and his wife, Alakir, they do worry about family and friends. And that's normal. You know, we live outside of our home countries and, you know, families can worry about us at times. And so, but in this situation, it's even more understandable because of the wars that go on there.
Right. So, you know, just as Zach mentioned and that we read on day one, he's offering psychiatric services, but he's also concerned about people who are still in that situation back home, you know, because their country is still in war and people are still suffering. And so they're trying to do whatever they can to assist.
All right. And so there's lots of suffering going on and he's helping people there in his home country. And someday, maybe as a nurse, his wife can actually go back there. So wow, that you would want to actually go back to a place where you've faced so much challenges and so much difficulty. That is amazing that you still have so much care in your heart. But of course you have family there. Of course those are your people. And so it makes sense that you'd want to go back, but no one would blame them for maybe not wanting to go back.
Well, I'm sure there were some bitter memories, and, you know, it's kind of hard to relive that experience. You want to move on, you want to have closure, but I think that's why this feature is here, and we're inspired to see how she wants to help as a nurse. He's helping in the realm of education.
Right, it's so true, and the thing that's really good to see is that he's saying, you know, other people reached out. The United States reached out to me. It's now my turn to reach out to others and guarantee that people have an opportunity to get out of those situations.
Yeah, and Jacob is helping children there in South Sudan. Actually, it says here he has brought a dozen children to a school in Kenya. And so he hasn't forgotten where he came from, and he's helping those who are in a similar situation that he went through. Education made his life better, he says, and he wants others to have the same opportunity, and he is giving back. And so we see, you know, how his story started. We see the perseverance in his life. He didn't give up, but he goes on further. He's not happy with just staying settled there in the United States and living his life. He has 6 kids to take care of, but he goes beyond that, and he's helping even more kids back in Africa. A truly inspiring story. Hope that you have enjoyed this 3-day inspiration article. And we hope you will join us again next time here on Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, this is Brandon.
And Zach.
And Joe.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.